So I'll be talking about sexual violence on prevention and an overview of looking at college campuses. And it's actually been quite, today, this is the third session in a row I've gone to where there's been content on sexual violence on college campuses, which I have to say at APHA, I don't remember that. Not and that is a reflection of, how do I,
which fault?
Which board? Oh, I have no disclosures to make. Yes, yeah, so and I will, if you want to, I'm going to show 1,000,005 slides and go through them really fast. And so I will post it. You can get through the APHA. I'll also post it on our website so you can get them, and it makes it easier to find and just search for APHA so you can be able to do this. So what we wanted to do is we did a scan, and realizing that sexual assault is in the news and is a topic on college campuses. And so what we wanted to do is be able to get some thematic sense around the prevention work, and that most of the discussion we see around sexual violence has been indeed around the response and how campuses will address that and what they'll be doing within their adjudication and within their some of their policies and looking at their Title IX compliance. But we wanted to look at it from a prevention practice. So we did key informant interviews with national providers and with selected campuses around promising practices, identifying top challenges and gaps for colleges and considerations to address. We did a lit review, and then we also based it on the experience that we've had in working with college campuses. And important to note that we did this in the summer of 2014, because since then, a lot has happened. And so, how many of you have seen the film The Hunting Ground? So, a very powerful, important movie that's drawing attention, and if it should be airing soon on CNN. I don't know exactly when soon, but soon. And then, how many of you read the book Missoula? Oh, it's a really, it's sort of, someone was telling me on the plane, actually, was saying it was too horrifying to read. She couldn't get past the first chapter because it's so powerful, but it's an important piece to realize. Of course, the whole Rolling Stone controversy around the case at UVA had come forward, and we also see the White House putting out the It's on Us campaign, and the National Sexual Violence Resource Center have been putting out a national campaign that happened around Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So there's been many changes that happened. This is a topic that is shifting all the time. There's also new research that happens. There's two studies that have come out this summer. One was what's become a controversial study looking at reanalyzing campus serial rapist assumptions. And another one was looking at a sexual assault resistance program. And so these all came after we did this review, so I want to just acknowledge the shifts that happened. But there are several guiding concepts that we found in being able to look at this work that emerged from this work that we think are important to realize. The first part is we look at a three-prong approach to being able how to effectively address and prevent sexual, domestic, dating, and stalking violence on college campuses. And the reason I come up with this long laundry list is that we often look and silo our sexual violence prevention efforts from our domestic violence prevention efforts, from our stalking prevention efforts, from our dating violence prevention efforts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that, what it does is there's so many common factors, particularly from a prevention perspective, that we have to look at the linkages and the connections in moving forward. So in doing this work, it's important that this can be trauma-informed and that we're going to be attentive to in doing our prevention work to be aware that there are so many people that enter college having already been sexually assaulted, in addition to the 1 in 5 who we expect to be sexually assaulted while they're in college. And so we see that this high prevalence is going to be that we need to be able to make sure that we're trauma-informed in how we're doing our prevention work, because in every audience we speak at, that there will always be survivors there. And then we have to realize that there's a variety of needs, there needs to be confidential resources, and we need to make sure that the policies, just because they're there, doesn't mean they are actually implemented. We also need to ensure that there is community collaboration and engagement. And what we deal with college campuses is that often that the college is dealing with this on their own and not looking at the partnerships with others. And in fact, even within the college, that there's not going to be collaboration because there's many different jurisdictions and responsibilities and authorities and silos, once again. I did military work. They call them stovepipes in the military. They don't call them silos. Is we need to do this. We also need to do systematic climate checks to know what goes on and recognize that universities and the communities surrounding them have a symbiotic relationship where it affects each other. And that if you're looking at some types of college campuses, this is very important. Because a community college, most people very often don't live on campus. They live within the community, and students are coming on and off campus, and we have to look at that relationship. And finally, we want to look at comprehensive prevention, because what we know is that no one strategy can be effective as multiple strategies. And while there's been a lot of attention, for example, in the session I was just at prior to this, someone was talking about bystander programs, and there was a concern saying there's a lot of focus on bystander programs, and while those are important, we cannot rely only on one strategy to be able to address these issues, yet it becomes difficult, because, and I'll talk about this, why there's challenges in doing that. Oh, time flies when you're having fun. We also want to look at the multiple levels, and we need to saturate our campuses. Now, I'm not going to spend my time trying to define what, when we talk about comprehensive prevention, I assume this is an audience that's familiar with the definitions of primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention. What we're talking about in comprehensive prevention is ensuring that we're doing all forms, and it's important to be able to recognize all ranges. What I do want to highlight is that often primary prevention is the one that is skipped, and that when we're going over, it's easier to talk about how to respond, but we need to talk about how to shift the changes in the environment. Also, we want to be able to look at all levels of the social ecological model. For college campuses, I look at the American College Health Association's recommendations, and they actually use, instead of the common four model that we have, this is an example of how CDC has shown the four model, they actually have a fifth model that holds an institutional ring. And the reason this is important is that the institution plays an important role, and I think it's more better to be explicit about that role than just being able to embed that within a community place. The other factor that's really important to realize is that the reason so much has happened within this country has been the lead of student activists, and that students have been speaking and coming forward, and this has been in great level the impetus for creating change, and as we move forward, that this is going to be an important factor that we need to be able to look at and find ways to continue as we move forward. What we're calling on is that necessary is for to have, and I like this from McAllister, which is a university in Minnesota, is that they actually highlight some of their different elements of their sexual violence prevention piece, and that it's important for prevention efforts to be planned, strategic, and intentional. That includes a mix of different topics or elements, a mix of dissemination modalities, and a mix of partnerships to be able to create that change. So from our what we want to do is often encourage people to campuses to be able to recognize the different areas of which they do their work and separate them out, and to recognize the advocacy work for essential is different than the outreach and awareness work, which is different than their risk reduction work, which is different than their primary prevention work. We're not saying that any of these have more value or less value, but you need to recognize what you're doing to map out what you can be able to do differently. We also live in a regulatory environment that's been shifting and changing, and so we see work. So within Title IX, there's language now that's rather vague, but does say that universities must be able to take proactive measures to prevent sexual harassment and sexual violence, and they have to implement preventative education programs. They're not better defined than this within the Title IX guidance, but Title IX is driving a lot of the universities because of the over 100 universities that are facing Title IX investigations right now in this country, and so that a lot of the work has been driven by understanding Title IX. There's also the Clery Act, which requires which looks at crime statistics reporting and requires implementation of what's called security awareness training and crime prevention. Notice the framing is different. And then, this is a great slide to take notes, that the Department of Education in the Violence Against, went through a rulemaking process, the Violence Against Women Act, and actually defines awareness programs, bystander intervention, ongoing prevention education, primary prevention programs, and risk reduction. They're actually really helpful definitions, so these are the more detailed pieces. This is why people are going to want to go and download this and not take notes here. In addition, they also have different elements that must be required of both primary prevention and awareness programs, and ongoing prevention campaigns must include several elements. So there's much language that's being involved here. So I just want to, the point of this is to recognize that there are these guidelines. In addition, there are state requirements. In California, we now have affirmative consent as state law. There's actually state programs where we see a large funder of is now funding college campuses to be able to address issues and develop partnerships with rape crisis centers. And different states are going to have different requirements and these mandates. And that's part of the context. And so this comes with many challenges and opportunities, which I'm going to have to go through really quickly because I've got 5 minutes and 27 seconds. So One of the challenges we have is that there is limited evidence of effectiveness of sexual and domestic violence prevention, especially for the college campuses. In the White House's Not Alone report that was released in 2014, that the CDC had done a piece, and in that they had highlighted what the evidence had shown, and shown three types of effective evidence-based programs that have gone through good, strong research. One of them was the Passing the Violence Against Women Act. Done that, been there. Important, but it probably can't be able to do that again. The others were two programs that were middle school programs. Those don't necessarily one that can be adapted for college campuses, so we are still in the process of learning. There is new emerging research that's going to be coming. We'll start seeing more college places that are having more rigorous research. They're using randomized clinical trials to be able to look at what we're doing to be able to determine effectiveness, but this is limited, but yet there are still many promising practices that we can need to be able to draw on. We also have, as I mentioned earlier, the fragmentation on campuses in the larger community and among different topics. And that we see this segmented, siloed approach is a barrier to change. When work is being done by the Title IX office, they're looking at Title IX compliance. Work is done by residential life, they're being driven by another. When it's done by judicial affairs, it's being driven in a different place. What we're wanting to do is really recommend that we have to think about how we're going to come up with a unified approach within a campus and within the community, recognizing that fragmentation. The other challenge is that there's no solution to a box. I recently went to a campus conference addressing sexual violence, and there were all the vendors of private firms that are selling their products, their online units that can be from a half hour to an hour long, to be able to do sexual violence prevention because they've identified a need. These programs might be an important part of an element, as one element of a prevention program, but we cannot find it in a box, yet they are being marketed as that. And it is important for us as public health professionals to really articulate how we cannot find that one answer, but to be able to find the best select collection of materials that can be done. That we have to recognize the unique needs of college campuses, and once again, similar to the one solution meets all, if you test something in one college, it's not going to work in another college. We see particularly around community colleges, trade schools, tribal colleges, religious colleges, commuter colleges, and we see much more diversity. It's very different than small private colleges or large state universities, which most of the discussions are about, and we need to talk about how to tailor and address those different needs, particularly around historically marginalized communities. And that this is a complex issue that is not about increasing knowledge. It's not about providing students knowing just the resources that are available. I think our direct supervision model of adolescence that you've proposed is more complex, of course, when dealing with adults who are at college campuses. And as a parent of a college student, it brings up lots of emotional issues for me. Remembering my days and then saying, but you can't do, but you will. So we see this different places that we need to be looking at this, and it's about creating culture change, and that this is long-term work that we have to be able thinking about. However, college campuses do create culture, and there is a campus culture, and there is an opportunity for us to be able to actually, in a time that's helping shape young adults in being members of our society, that we can be able to take this opportunity to take advantage. It's important to be able to have a gender equity perspective in the sexual violence prevention. That's an important part of Title IX and many other areas. Some programs are de-emphasizing this. We don't want to find ways to stigmatize particularly men feeling that they're being accused, but we also need to make sure that we're looking at a gender equity element, and we also need to figure out how we're going to measure our success. This is often have a paradoxical impact that if you see good sexual violence prevention efforts going on, what we'll see, for example, in the Cleary, that all campuses are required to report sexual assaults in the Cleary Act, you will see those numbers increase. When the numbers increase, that is probably a reflection of that they're doing creating greater access of people to report what's happening, as opposed to an increased prevalence, or at least it's difficult to sort that out. And so we have to watch out in that. If someone is going to a college with zero reported rapes, that is an unsafe place, because this means that no one is willing to come forward and be able to report this, and yet in our college surveys and safest college campuses, those will be the ones that will be considered safer because they have lower reports. The higher reports actually, paradoxically, might mean a safer environment. So we have many different approaches. If I were doing a longer one, these are some of just a list of the different approaches. We'll be putting out some materials highlighting some of the, how to be able to, what some of these include. There's many different types of partnerships. The key to this is that we want the partnerships need to be tailored to each campus and find the right places and develop community partnerships that are going to be able to move forward. And there's many different dissemination modalities that are being used. And it's finding the right mix of modalities as opposed to finding the one perfect one. Particularly many are using the online orientation. So finally, we want to be able to learn from our experiences, map out where people are going. This is still in the news. There's great resources out of Department of Justice work. The CDC has been doing some work that has been coming out with guidance later on. We recently received funding to actually adapt one of those middle school programs using a situational prevention approach, which is a criminal justice approach, to adapt one of those shifting boundaries, which is one of the programs that was found effective for middle schools, and try to adapt that in a partnership with these organizations to adapt this to a college campus. And we're going to be looking at doing that work here. We also are going to be establishing, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, having a series of web conferences this next year focusing on college campuses so we can continue learning from each other to be able to make change. So thank you.
And I apologize, I didn't actually introduce David Lee, who is the Director of Prevention Services at California Coalition Against Sexual Assault and Prevent Connect. But thank you, David.